Think about it like this, Andy. If you were to have bought a copper royalty 20 years ago, right, you'd have 1% of copper, which was around $1 per pound. Today, 20 years later, copper is around $4.50 per pound. I don't know if copper will be $18 per pound 20 years from now, but I think it really just demonstrates that through a royalty company, your exposure as a percentage of revenue is on the top line, and you really do benefit as you move forward in time. When you combine that with the point I just made of sort of incentive prices required to push new supply as and when mines deplete or become higher costs as a result of grade declines, the outlook for copper is pretty compelling. And that's before you even think about demand growth.
Mark Bishop LaFleche, Ecora Resources, good morning to you, my friend, or I should say good afternoon. You are out of the UK. It's really good to see you. How are you?
Very well, Andy. Thanks for having me on today.
The pleasure is all mine, too. Let me talk to my viewers and listeners here briefly. I am an investor in Ecora Resources. I first met Mark in Boca Raton during July. I was very interested in them as an investor. And I became one. They also, as of recently, decided to work with me and sponsored natural resource stocks, which I'm very grateful and happy with. Mark, let's start out first with, and I'll just ask you this very similar questions as I did in Boca Raton. Very interested in you in two, well, many different ways, primarily that you're a royalty company. But also, what I like is that you're in the critical mineral space. So tell me about that and go from there.
Yes, well, Ecora in that sense is quite differentiated. There are certainly many royalty companies that exist in the world. Not that many, though, focusing on the critical mineral suite as we do at Ecora. And this business at Ecora historically was really tied to steelmaking coal. The group had an incredible royalty in the steelmaking coal mine in Australia. And effectively, for the better part of a decade, we've been taking those cash flows in part and reallocating them to the critical mineral suite. And we've, in that period of time, taken, for example, our copper exposure from materially zero part of our net assets to now over 50%. And beyond that, the core of the portfolio is in base metals with nickel and cobalt exposure. But also with uranium exposure, vanadium exposure, rare earth exposure, the type of portfolio which is really aligned in the future towards electrification, and whether that electrification trend is driven by data, digital infrastructure, renewable energy, EVs, GDP growth, urbanization, any of the above or all of the above, I think our portfolio is quite uniquely positioned to give investors exposure to that suite of commodities over good quality projects or operations that are expected or are in production at lower operating costs or expected to come into production at low operating costs for the foreseeable future.
Got it. So let me work that out a little bit more. Explain to me the coal royalties and the exposure there. And correct me if I'm wrong, net coal or correct, which is used for building steel. So a lot of people, and myself included, several years ago, they're going to think of coal as power, heating your home, that sort of thing. But that is not the coal that you have, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's a steel making coal operation in Australia. And our royalty there covers a portion of the mine plan, but not the entirety of the mine plan. So our royalty income from that royalty, the Kestrel royalty, is sort of split where in H1 of this year, for example, we didn't receive very much income, expecting to receive much more income in the second half of the year. And that royalty is expected to run out in about 5 years when mining will continue at the mine, just no longer in our royalty area. But I think in some respects, you know, met steelmaking coal is slightly out of fashion, right? There are a lot of groups who just don't look at it or cannot look at it as a result of restrictions. That being said, you know, from our perspective, cash is cash. And we've been able to redeploy those cash flows into, you know, building other assets. And if you think coal, if you think coal royalty cash flows trade at 6 or 7 and 8 times historically, well, base metals royalties can trade in the double in the teens or even in the 20s. So in that sense, we think it's quite a value accretive way to redeploy capital and create shareholder value. And we're really excited about this business as it transitions to what are a core portfolio in critical minerals that have mine lives that are expected, that you measure in decades, as opposed to the met coal royalty. Ever since that I've been part of this company, we had a finite mine life and sort of was always perceived to have a bit of a cliff to it.
Yeah. And I think, and I say this with all due respect, I think you're underselling that. So I look at the coal property or the royalty, if you would, and I see the cash coming in. And another thing that the thing that I loved about Ecora is you've taken that cash and you redeployed it into critical minerals such as copper. You have a significant copper exposure here, plus the base metals that aren't getting the love that I think, but I see shortages in or coming shortages in. So talk about that more now. Talk about especially the copper exposure there and the redeployment in the other commodities.
Well, that's a really exciting part about Ecora. And I think it's a part that's often overlooked. I think a lot of people sort of look at this company for what it was, not what it is or what it'll soon be. And that to that end, our base metals portfolio in the first half of this year, for example, grew 81% versus the first half of last year. And we had a lot of momentum in our producing base metals assets coming into this year. And that's expected to continue from a volume growth perspective in the second half of this year and beyond. One of our copper royalties, Mantos Blancos, is coming off of three quarterly records of royalty income. So really strong operational performance in terms of volume and price. But further growth expected in copper from a producing copper stream we bought earlier this year called Mimbula. And that's kind of the tip of the spear, really, in terms of our base metals exposure. When you look at this pipeline of growth we have in the portfolio, as I mentioned, historically, it was basically zero copper exposure. Copper's at the core, and there's sort of a pipeline of growth that we bought for, that we own, that runs sort of into this next 5 years, but beyond the next decade as well. So it's a really exciting aspect of our business, particularly when you think of the longer-term supply-demand balance, which, you know, generally, the copper market is expected to move to a deficit not too far from now in the future. And on top of that, you know, finding new ore bodies of copper and extracting them is just proving to be much more expensive than it was maybe 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So in that sense, I think what you see for copper is that the marginal cost of building a new copper mine typically requires a higher market price for copper. And if you're a royalty company, that's a great place to be, because we receive a percentage of the revenue generated, so by a mine, but we don't have the same negative that a mining company has in terms of cash outflow from the cost of actually extracting that copper. Think about it like this, Andy. If you were to have bought a copper royalty 20 years ago, right, you'd have 1% of copper, which was around $1 per pound. Today, 20 years later, copper is around $4.50 per pound. I don't know if copper will be $18 per pound 20 years from now, but I think it really just demonstrates that through a royalty company, your exposure as a percentage of revenue is on the top line, and you really do benefit as you move forward in time. And when you combine that with the point I just made of sort of incentive prices required to push new supply as and when mines deplete or become higher cost as a result of great declines, the outlook for copper is pretty compelling. And that's before you even think about demand growth.
Yeah, no, I would agree with everything that you said with that. And I'd like to add, let me talk to my viewers and listeners here. Guys, this is how I love royalty companies, but all royalty companies aren't the same. Let me just tell you what I look for in a royalty company. One of the things is I want to see a differentiator. And I think, well, I'm very confident and know that Ecora is a differentiator, meaning they have exposure and they're doing things that I don't currently have exposure with. Really what I like to see is how much cash flow they have coming in now. That means their royalties are paying. I would say they have accomplished that with coal. And I think they strategically, they really did a great job of this, of getting into the other assets, if you would, looking into the future, if you would. And I want to see what royalties are hitting and paying right now. Again, bringing in cash flow to the company. And then it's almost like a staggered approach. Okay, what do you have now? And these are the questions I asked to Mark in Florida when I was up in Boca Raton. What royalties do you have coming in 6 months or in 26? And what companies do you have coming in later? So again, it's a staggered. This stuff is starting to hit, because when is it hitting? And that's then I can guesstimate, if you would, cash flow to the company and shareholder value. So Mark, let's talk a little bit about copper. Is your copper royalties, are they paying as of right now? Just clarity on that.
Yeah, so the copper royalties we have today generating income for us are number one, Mantos Blancos. And that one in the first half of this year generated just under $4 million. The second one we have is Mimbula. We just bought this royalty. This one is probably what we generated in H1 is certainly not reflective of the true earnings power of this stream, this copper royalty, simply because we didn't have it for the entirety of the H1 period. So you can't really do a like-for-like comparison. But also the team at Mimbula is undertaking an expansion. And that expansion is to take copper production capacity from 14,000 tons a year up to capacity of 56,000 tons, or 14,000 tons last year is actually what they produced last year. It's not necessarily the capacity of the operation currently. So at full production capacity, and if you assume $10,000 per ton copper, Mimbula generates a run rate in the order of $10 million per year. And we have a royalty over a mine in producing in the United States, Carlota. This is a fairly small royalty though. This one generates something like $500,000 to $750,000 a year. This is a small one. Looking into the future, a copper royalty we have over the Santo Domingo project is a big part of our growth. This royalty is owned by, or the mine, excuse me, is owned by Capstone Copper. And this is a project which is shovel ready, fully permitted. And the next steps, as can be discussed by Capstone Copper, are to, number one, bring in a financial partner. Number two, next year is be the earliest final investment decision to proceed with construction. And then the third key sort of value catalyst, as we see it with this royalty, would be first income. At full production, this royalty generates a steady state income of around $30 million per year. That's assuming long-term copper today of around just under $4.50 per pound, which is not too far away from $10,000 per ton. And because, of course, as we just discussed with the royalty model, you sort of benefit from the nominal price without the cost impact, then this is a royalty that could see us do a lot better just with inflation.
Right. So again, talking to my viewers and listeners, again, and I've also evaluating, and I'm going to ask Mark this in a second, and evaluating a royalty company. What I also like to see really where their assets are, and I'm going to ask Mark, what percentage of the royalties, if you can't discuss that, do you have on the different projects, specifically here with copper? How do you negotiate that, and what have you negotiated on? And then really, how do you find for future growth? How do you find the next project? What's your evaluation process?
Yeah, so why don't we just take those one at a time? So the first is, what does the portfolio look like? So as I mentioned today, 80% roughly is base metals. And of that 80%, 50 is copper, which leaves roughly 30 split between cobalt and nickel. The other 11% would be specialty metals and uranium. That's primarily vanadium, uranium, and some rare earths. And then the last 10%, just under 10%, would be bulks and other. And that would include things like the met coal royalty, which is now a fairly small portion of our net asset value as estimated by research analysts, iron ore, chrome. In terms of the producing portfolio itself, as a percentage of our total net asset value, again, from what the analysts calculate is the individual parts of ECORA, so the value of each royalty, research analysts estimate that around 55% of the value of this portfolio is in assets that are already generating income. So in other words, to the point that you mentioned earlier, the vast, the majority actually of the value in Ecora is on mines generating cash flow in production, but still with a good amount of value to near-term development stage, sort of longer dated expert development, and then earlier stage exploration. And the geographic exposure is something we've really been careful to target jurisdictions that are really established mining jurisdictions, because as a royalty company, you know, your royalty is over a mine and or a project, and therefore good title to the mining company and indirectly to Ecora is really important. So we've saw our portfolio today is approximately 85% OECD in Brazil, which are very well established mining jurisdictions. And then the two key exposures outside of that are to Zambia. Our copper stream in Zambia is in a province called the Copper Belt. So that'll give you a clue as to what they do there. And in South Africa for rare earths exposure, which we believe our rare earths exposure over that project is one of the best undeveloped rare earths projects globally outside of China. So it gives you a feel for where we are, you know, places where, you know, all these places are places we would go ourselves, and we do go visit these assets, all places where I'd be very comfortable taking my family. I've been to Zambia, I've been to this mine, we've been to South Africa to visit this rare earths exposure, which is actually very close to a beautiful park. And part of the attractions of the rare earth project is that they will clean up what is otherwise a legacy environmental concern. So all very positive news there. And then last, and when we think about our portfolio, is cost curve positioning. And this is something that's really important as a royalty investor. Now, if you're buying a royalty, you know, the likelihood of a project staying in production, if it's already in production, or the likelihood of a development stage project coming into production is very much highly correlated to the economics of this underlying project. And therefore, we really target assets or projects that have or are expected to have very low operating costs relative to other producers of the same commodity. And you know, you can see that when you look at our portfolio from the investments we've made. 80% of the exposures we have are mines or development stage projects that are expected to operate in the lowest half of all global producers for those individual commodities. So it's a very defensive way to position a portfolio. I think if you complement the royalty model and low cost exposures, that's really when you're best positioned to have a portfolio that shines over the long term.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that too. It's a great way to look at royalty companies, especially Ecora. Think of this as you're getting, to all my viewers and listeners, you're getting exposure to the different commodities or the commodity that they have the most exposure to, but you're doing it in a very, or should be doing it in a very safe way. Meaning Mark doesn't have to worry about running a mine. Mark doesn't really have to worry about all of the nuances and getting permitted and those sort of things. And Mark's overhead is actually significantly is not a good word, but I'll say it, significantly lower than running a mine. Basically, well,
Andy, I think last year we generated $5 or $6 million per employee in Ecora.
Exactly. There you go. I laugh because that's stupidly good. So, well, let me ask you this, Mark. How many people are employed at Ecora?
Yeah, right around 10.
Yeah, exactly. So that is, think about that. You have access to a commodity and your access to the mine and all of that generates, and you have 10 employees as opposed to in the hundreds or in the thousands. Correct, Mark?
Yeah, it's a really scalable model, right? And I think that's kind of the beauty is, of course, it's pretty well staffed to run a portfolio of this size, to manage the acquisition of new royalties, and then to manage subsequently the monitoring on the day-to-day of the investments we've made. So it's really, really scalable. I think when you look at the portfolio as well, I mean, this is all from our company presentations, if any of your viewers are keen to look at the exact figures. But you know, the business today generates this year, for the first time, I think, in Ecora's history, is on track to generate more than 50% of its revenue from critical minerals, which is quite the milestone, actually.
Yeah.
And you're looking at revenue that runs sort of the measured in decades as opposed to measured in years as it was previously with the Metcoal royalty. So that's quite, you know, a milestone that we're really excited about. But as a spot check, you have a portfolio, you know, 5 years ago that was generating right around sub $10 million from its critical minerals base. This year, it's on track for somewhere around slightly over 25, maybe, if you look at the research analyst forecasts. By the end of the decade, the producing portfolio is expected to generate somewhere around 45 or 50. And again, this all depends really on commodity price expectations, of course. On top of that, $50 million from the producing portfolio is a potential from development stage assets, which are expected to come into production. And that takes us at above $100 million potentially of income. So yeah, this portfolio is really well positioned based on the investments we've already made. They don't really require substantially more investment to achieve the pipeline that I've just, you know, the illustrative pipeline I've just laid out for you. Yeah, 2025 is a really exciting year. We always knew that the end of the Metcoal royalty would come. And don't get me wrong, there's still some great cash flows to come from the Metcoal royalty. But Ecora is very rapidly turning into something that's quite rare in the world, which is a way to get critical minerals exposure in a royalty model at a time where, you know, it's difficult to look around or turn on the news and not hear about the importance of critical minerals to economies of the future, whether it be the US government's, the DOD's recent investment into MP Materials, the rare earths producer, whether it be an announcement as recent as a few weeks ago that the US DOD has gone out to market to potentially stockpile alloy grade cobalt for something that hasn't really happened since the end of the Cold War. We have investments where the US government actually is an indirect shareholder in some of these projects because the minerals are so strategic. And it's a great time, I think, for Ecora because it just really, the equity story we have and the portfolio we have really aligns nicely with some long-term trends we see in the world today where governments are seeking, as a result of geopolitical competition, security and access to these minerals as really cornerstone materials to any modern economy.
Yeah. So if you would, two things. Well, let me ask you this, and this goes into value of the company. What is your current market cap?
The current market cap of Ecora is approximately $250 million USD. We have approximately 110 of debt, so the enterprise value is around 360. We have in the company 249 shares on issuance. We're listed in the UK as well as Toronto and in the OTCQX. We trade there on the OTCQX platform for US viewers if they're keen to do so. We don't really materially have any options or warrants, so it's a very clean capital structure in that regard.
Very tight. Let me ask you this. What is your background here? And you sound, and I mean this in the best way, this is the person that should be running a royalty company, but you sound like an accountant. You're all about the numbers. What's your background?
Well, you know, that's what we are as a royalty company, right? We do a lot. We think very carefully about how we allocate capital, think very hard about where we should put our dollars. You know, at Ecora, I think we've been pretty measured. You know, we don't really think about deploying in terms of number of royalties. We just think about the quality of the investment, whether that's a $1 million investment or a $200 million investment. The criteria are pretty similar in terms of counterparty, jurisdiction, cost curve positioning, quality of the ore body. I started off my career in investment banking, so not quite accounting, Andy, which you might find disappointing. But yeah, I worked in investment banking covering a number of sectors, but primarily natural resources and mining. And I also worked in leveraged finance and high yield. And then I had an opportunity to join a royalty company. And actually, you know, for me personally anyways, the royalty model is quite a unique blend of my personal skill sets because the royalty investing is not too dissimilar in some respects to M&A or transactional type processes. But the royalty investment model also has some very debt-like aspects when we look at taking security for our investments and sort of debt-like features. The royalty instrument sits somewhere between debt and equity. And for me personally, it was a great fit. My colleague, Kevin, who's the CFO, will be really pleased to hear that you say I sound like an accountant. Like
yeah. Well, Mark, let's land the plane here. Say again what platform, what exchanges you're traded on, and what are your ticker symbols? And I'll also put all of this in the show notes below on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify.
So Ecora trades in London on the ticker ECOR. We trade in on the QX, OTCQX, ECRAF, and on the TSX under the ticker ECOR. But I think for your viewers, I really just hopefully they'll find the Ecora opportunity to be sort of exciting as we see it. We spent the better part of a decade actually positioning this portfolio for the transition away from the met coal into something new. And we've really seen the beginning actually in H1 2025, where you really start to see just the tip of the cash generation potential that exists in this company based on the investments that we've made in the past. For those who are new to the Ecora story, I hope you find it as exciting and that. Exciting in the sense that we do, being at this, what we see is an inflection point when we go from, quite a rapid pace of growth from a critical minerals via portfolio.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Mark. Love to have you on again soon. And a fantastic quarter that you guys have had. I'll also link to that in the show notes for all investors and viewers that want to read the quarterly reports.
Thank you, Andy. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's really great to see you. Thank you so much.